Now it is my privilege to introduce tonight's speaker, Mick. Please offer him a warm Valley Group welcome.
My name is Mick, and I'm an alcoholic. I was sitting up here thinking, that's where I started messing up. But I was thinking about, I live in Porterville, I've been living there for a number of years now, and never in my wildest dreams a number of years back would I have got in my car and drove to Visalia to hang out with a bunch of drunks. And, you know, things are different today. Things are definitely different. And I think that's been the key right there. A willingness to change. You know, I've done things a certain way for a long time and got the same results for a long time. Imagine that. And it's only been through a lot of pain that I've made these small tweaks in my life to change a little bit here and a little bit there and a little bit there to have some dramatic change in my life. My experience, strength, and hope. Well, I remember the first time that liquor hit me, I thought, why the hell am I not like this all the time? Who in their right mind would go through the day without being liquored up? This is the greatest freaking feeling in the world. I absolutely love this. This is fantastic. Yeah, my first love. So I had an interesting childhood. Grew up in a big family. I have five sisters, two brothers. We had a pretty big family. Mom stayed at home and dad worked, my father was pretty physical, and so there was some getting thrown around the house kind of stuff going on, and head going through the wall stuff going on. And I remember at a real young age sitting there after an altercation, and I was holding my Walkman that was all busted up in my hands, and I said, nobody should have to live this way, to continually be treated in this manner. And so I said, okay, I'm going to get a hold of the cops, and they're going to take them away, and I'll be all right. And then I thought about it. You know, with all my brothers and sisters, dad's the breadwinner. He's going to get taken away. We're not going to have any money, and we're going to starve, and all my brothers and sisters are going to hate me. I'm the oldest. I said, no, I can't do that. So I'm going to take this anger, this rage, these feelings that I'm feeling, and I'm going to bury it down deep. I'm going to bury it so low that, you know, I'm never going to feel it again. And I'm going to go outside, and I'm going to hit that weight pile, and I'm going to be the biggest person I could possibly be, and no one's ever going to lay hands on me again. And that was my game plan for many years. And both worked. But for most of my life, I haven't felt how much of anything. And then discovering alcohol, you know, problems started happening. First it was fun, and then it was fun with trouble, and then it was just flat out nothing but trouble. I remember My dad owned a janitorial business, and so most of the guys he hired were right out of the pen or right out of county, and that basically that's who I grew up with. That's been my older brother influence, if you may. And so we would drink on the way to work because I'm from Portobello. We drive to Bakersfield. We drive to Fresno, doing the janitorial accounts, stripping and waxing floors, and doing stuff like that. So we'd get liquored up on the way to work, get liquored up on the way back. And I remember clear as day going to work and then waking up the next day in my bed, not remembering driving down 65, not remembering parking the truck, nothing, just total blackout. You know, went, okay, everything's still here. Whew, truck's all right, okay, yeah, I'm okay. Just went, you know, nothing happened, cool. And just did the same thing the same night, or the next night, and the next night, and the next night. And I thought that was perfectly normal. I thought everybody blacked out. You know, just something that you did. You drink enough, you black out, and you have some cool stories, or cool stories that you don't remember. And so I dealt with that for many years. You know, it didn't cause too much grief. Until I woke up out of a blackout in a high-speed chase in a residential area, and I had basically a whole bunch of cops and sheriffs there running after me. Well, actually driving after me. The running came later. I'll get to that part. So I do not remember trying to run over the cop who was on the side of the road deploying the spikes. That I do not remember. I do remember playing chicken with the two sheriff cars. And I saw, you know, from TV, if you drive at them, they're going to get out of the way, and they're not going to run into you. I learned that on Cops. And so, yeah, I remember splitting them and cheering and thinking that was fantastic. And I was in a neighborhood where there wasn't any mailboxes, so I can go up on the driveway onto the grass, and so the chase went on for a while. And of course, at the end of the chase, I did what every excellent criminal does at the end of a chase: you put it in park and you get out and run. So that's when the cops were running after me. And I saw this fence, and I was, yeah, I could get over this fence. I ran and I jumped, and I went face first in the fence and landed on the ground. And I remember the cops yelling something in another language to the dogs. So I never got bit, thank God for that. And the cop just walked up to me, and he just tapped me on the back and said, "All right, let's go." And he escorted me back to the cop car, and then that was it. I didn't get beat up. There was no more, you know, exciting part of the story. But I didn't know that I was getting charged with attempted murder of a peace officer. That part I found out the next day when I was getting my CAT scans and stuff, because I face planted on my head. On my face, yeah. And that, I thought, was going to be my bottom. And they said, yeah, you're looking at 17 years for what you've done. And I didn't remember it. I didn't remember anything that happened. I did what all drunks do. God, if you only get me out of this one, you know? Just like how I'd done on all the other times I'd gotten in trouble. God, if you only get me out of this one. And unfortunately, I wasn't paying attention to the previous times I'd asked him for help. I'd gotten DUIs, and they make you go to those meetings, you know, and they gave me six AA meetings. I was like, my gosh, how am I going to do six meetings? This is too much. And of course, I didn't do them until like the very end. I waited, you know, the whole time. I did the whole year of the classes that you do over there. Well, you really don't learn anything. You just get a brag about what you have done. Every time I got in trouble, I prayed, God, please get me out of this. And he gave me more meetings. And I didn't learn anything at the meetings. Although a seed was planted, I remember somebody saying. And so this time that I was charged with this crime, I'm, you know, of course, praying, God help me, and he did. He gave me more meetings. And that turned out to not be my bottom. I went through getting locked up. I went through that, and because I was in janitorial, when they heard about that, as soon as I come in, they put me to work doing floors. So I worked all night doing floors and slept during the day. So I had and I ate really well in there. I got really fat. My jail experience was a little bit different. So I didn't learn any kind of a lesson, that's for sure. And so I continued to get in trouble after that and ask for help. And I hit another bottom, and I was taken to a recovery home in Porterville. So they sat me down with the steps, started learning the steps, and that concept of being powerless, that I had to admit that I was powerless over my life, and it had become unmanageable. And this that I was putting in, this alcohol was only but a symptom of this disease that I had. And so worked on the steps, found a sponsor, life started getting just great. And when I got out of that recovery club, I went back to my old ways. I didn't keep going to meetings. I didn't keep doing what the program suggested, and ended up in the same place that I was before. Got in trouble, asked God for help, and he gave me more meetings. And it didn't really click for the longest time that I have this higher power who I'm asking for help, and he is helping me, but I'm not seeing what he's blessing me with. I'm not seeing that. It's like that that joke that people tell about that guy stranded in a flood on top of a house, and he's praying and asking for help, and you know, a boat comes, and he's like, no, God's coming to help me, you know, keep on going. A helicopter comes, no, God's going to help me get out of here. And then the water overtakes him and he dies, and he's, God, what the heck's going on? I asked for help. Why sent you a boat and a helicopter, dummy? You know, what's wrong with you? And I've been feeling like that. I call this time, I had this opportunity to learn and to receive help, and for whatever reason, it just took that long for it to click. So I got the sponsor, and I'm working with him, and I stopped calling my sponsor, and I stopped going to meetings, and I was going to like maybe one a week, and then one every other week, and then lo and behold, I go down that same road. And I do learn through great pain eventually. Unfortunately, gosh, got the scars to prove it. And I really wish I learned another way, but then again, I wouldn't have, you know, as many cool stories, that's for sure. I go to actually most of my meetings are men's stags meetings. I have to be careful about what I share, and I'm able to get more of me out at men's stags. And so I started going to one, and I started doing a lot of help, and I started going to another one, and it's helped me out quite a bit. So I had put some time together after this last time that I got in trouble and got a really good job, started settling down, and once again, the same cycle of not calling my sponsor. And I'm saying this over and over again because I need to remind myself, I'm going through some issues right now. And I need to remind myself to call my sponsor. I haven't called him. So if I say it a bunch of times right now, it's really for me. So I need to call my sponsor, and I need to keep going to meetings. Because I had this really cool job, and for me, when life gets rough, I normally bear down and I do what I need to do to take care of myself. It's when life is going great that I relapse. I can exhale. I can take a step back and say, you know what, God, I got this. You know, I'm cool. There's plenty of other people out there that need your help. But right now, I mean, I'm doing great. So thank you. And then, boom, I get in trouble again. I stop going to meetings. I stop calling my sponsor. And so I got this really cool job, and you know, I'm praying all the time, and I'm thanking God for this wonderful job, and I got this huge raise, and everything is just going great. I bought a new truck, and I got a promotion, and I bought another new truck, and 2 months later, my wife goes out of town, takes the girls for, because there's a church camp down in L.A., and I went, you know what, life has been really good. And I can handle a six-pack and a movie. No, 18-pack. No, let's just get two cases and some vodka and this movie. And that's it, you know. And I'll do it, and it'll be over. And, you know, I'm going to congratulate myself. A week later, I woke up in my grandmother's house. There was blood coming from my face. My body was smashed. I was like, what? What the hell happened to me? I felt like I got run over and then beat up and then ran over a second time. The whole week went by, and I had got in a car wreck. I didn't have my seatbelt on. I went flying against the windshield. I almost ran some little girl over. I smashed into three cars and totaled my brand new truck that I had for 2 months. 2 months, and it was brand spanking new. And I'm laying there in this bed going, what the heck happened? How could I let this happen again? How could I let this happen again? And they talk about that incomprehensible demoralization. Because I knew I had lost everything. Everything was gone. Everything was gone. Sure enough, I was charged and got another, I think instead of getting a DUI, I got like a, you know, wet and reckless. But still. So insurance covered 3/4 of the vehicle, like that Liberty Mutual commercial talks about. So there's this other kind of insurance called gap insurance that pays for the other 25%. Well, let me tell you that if you're involved in some kind of a crime, it's null and void. So I had lost my job, lost my truck, was not given any money to buy a new one, and had to pay for the rest of the truck off. And man, that was a sweet truck. I got taken to the yard where it was at, and I looked at it, and you know what, guys? I just cried. I would just smile, and I would stomp on the gas, and I would just drive around, and man, I loved that truck. And it just sucked, and I cried. And I had a sweet job, too. I worked for the city. I had everything, retirement benefits, the whole shebang. And I lost that, too. And how am I going to pay for anything? How am I going to make any kind of ends meet? And I did remedial stuff. Lifted up. My uncle has a recycling business, and so for 8 months I was out in the. Because this happened in July, so it was during the summertime. I would lift up TVs, stack them on a pallet, wrap them up in plastic, and then do another length and then on another level. And I did that all day, stacking freaking TVs. And a month would go by, and I'd pray and I'd ask God for help. And another month would go by, and another month would go by. And yeah, I was like 8 months, 9 months, something like that. And there was nothing. Going out there looking for work, I look at your record, and they're like, yeah, going down the road, buddy. You know, there's nothing you can do with that feeling when you go on and looking for work and your background is just crap. And, man, that sucks. You know, you do the whole interview part and they're like, yeah, we want to hire you. Oh, by the way, have you ever been charged with a crime? And then, you know, whatever it is, just put on this little spot right here. And you're like... And they're just looking at you going, well, we're going to be honest, right? We're going to be honest and put it all there. And I just go, thanks, but no thanks. So during this time of stacking these TVs, I got an opportunity to get closer with my higher power. Who my higher power is, what he can do. I was born into a religious family, so I'm not going to talk about religion up here. But my understanding of what my higher power is really took on a different meaning during this eight months. I could tell you the stories of the Bible, you know, no problem there. But it was, how do I apply this higher power in my life to get any kind of a change, to get any kind of results? You know, what is this higher power to me? You know, what is God to me? Okay, talks about a loving higher power. And I have come to find out, come to believe, come to understand that this love of my higher power, the only way I can put it into words is when my daughters were born, and I'm sitting there and holding her in my arms for the first time, and the overwhelming feeling in my heart, this love that I have for my daughter. How much more my higher power has that for me? And I began to grow more in my understanding of who my higher power is when I thought about it that way. You know, that poem about the footsteps in the sand, about, hey, where were you when I was going through all that rough stuff? There's only one set of footprints, higher power. We were walking together, and looking back, where were you at? And I was carrying you. I was carrying you through that. how much that means to me today. Understanding how to rely, how to ask my higher power for help. In these meetings, we talk about, you know, God's will and what it is in our life, and trying to understand what that is. I don't know. I pray and I do the best I can, and I go forward. And if something doesn't work out, I keep praying, and I go a different direction. And I got this other job, and I was doing great on it, and it was a sales gig, and they gave me a car. It was the goofiest car you ever seen. It was for artificial turf, so there was fake grass on the car. It was wrapped in fake grass, and it was this little tiny cube. See, I'm 280 pounds, so you can imagine me coming out of this little car that I felt would like flip over when I went around a curb. But it was so cool working for this company, and I made it. I said, you know what? Okay. You have drank enough, I guess, you know. You've gotten as drunk as you possibly can get. You've tried that. I've tried everything I could to get as liquored up as possible. Let's just try it this other way. Literally, that's exactly what I told myself. Let's just try it this other way. I'm going to do what these knuckleheads in the meeting have been suggesting all this time that I haven't been listening to. So I started going to plenty of meetings. And when I say plenty, I mean three. You know, I'm going to be honest. I go to three a week. You know, I don't want to over-exaggerate, but it's three. I go to three meetings a week. Or at that time, I was going three meetings a week, calling my sponsor. And God stepped up in my life, and I was finagled into running a meeting. I had came to this meeting because I knew they needed somebody to be of service, and I was coming to volunteer for the alternate GSR because I was going to be of service. Yes, you can count on me. Alternate GSR. And the secretary was leaving that meeting, and he goes, yeah, so I talked to my sponsor, and we decided we're going to nominate Mick. You're going to do it. Nope, you're going to do it. And I became the secretary, and it forced me to go to that meeting every week. So I had my two for the week, and then that was my third. I only wanted two, but, you know. And the taking suggestions part is key. I go through things in my life where I heard this phrase in here, first thought, wrong thought, and running my own business for a good portion of my life. It was hard for me to wrap my head around that. First thought, wrong. You know what? But I make business decisions all the time. However, I have noticed when I get upset, first thought, karate chop. That's what I feel. So I can use that phrase in that aspect of my life. Because when I get mad and my feelings are hurt, I want to then make you hurt for hurting me. I don't know if any of you guys can relate to that, but as soon as I feel pain, I want you to feel pain. First thought, karate chop, whenever I get mad. And so I've had an opportunity to work on that with my sponsor. We have went through the steps. My business took off again. I got back into janitorial and got back into painting, and it just took off. I stayed going to meetings. I I stayed connected. I hang out. You know, we get all kind of people that we hang out with. And it's amazing. You know, I'm a white guy. That's it. When I was locked up, and you're around that mentality, and you come home saying stuff like, you know what I'm saying? I don't talk like that, you know? And, you know, my wife just looked at me and said, well, what are you doing? That's not you. But you get around that element for a long time, and you change. You start talking like, my point is, you start talking like who you are around. You know, who do you want to talk like? And so I, for the most part, only hang out with guys in the program. I got a church group that I hang out with, and I hang out with guys in the program. And I can be me. I can't. It helps me to not pretend to be somebody else. And that's who I want to be today. I want to trust in my higher power, and that's not exactly easy. I've been trying to get a different job, working for the state, and I've been running into that right now again with okay, have you ever committed a crime? You know, fill it all out, and the 2 pages that I got to fill out for that, and I have been turned down 3 times. And you know what, guys? That sucks. Man, that sucks. And I'm praying, and I'm asking for help. And I don't know what God's will is. I have no idea. I feel He's leading me in this right direction. But, you know, sometimes it's difficult just to believe in faith and that He's going to take care of you. I'm very good at that sometimes in my life, and then sometimes I fall well short. So I have noticed. I have noticed that when I go to more meetings, my life gets better. I do more things program related, and my life gets better. I haven't went to any conventions, but a couple years ago I started going to men's retreats. Holy crap. It is what I have been able to receive from these retreats spiritually. Because, yeah, I don't know about you guys, I drank to change the way that I felt. That's it. I just wanted to feel differently. I go to these retreats, and I feel it right here. I just feel good. I feel spiritually fed. And I went to this retreat. I woke up the next day, and there was snow on the ground. And I just went, holy crap. All right, I'm going to keep going. That's it. I try to go at least 4 of them a year, about every 3 months. And I got friends that we go and it's changed my life. Absolutely changed my life. I didn't know how much that I needed to not mess up again, to not lose everything again. And so far, this has been working. And it's been working for 1,287 days. And I look at that app on my phone, and I think about it, you know. I think about waking up in at my grandmother's house, covered in blood and smashed up. Because I don't know about you guys, but my disease wants me by myself. It wants to isolate me. And then that idea comes back. Hey, why don't you have something to drink? And it starts off with we'll just have just one. You know, which one tastes the best? Yeah, we'll just have that one. Then it's, no, we're going to have six. No, you're going to have to go to the store. It's 12. No, okay, we'll get a couple cases and then you'll be all right. And I forget, where I came from sometimes. And I've come to realize that if I don't remember that, you know, I might end up there all over again. And I've cried out to my higher power and asked for help for years. And lo and behold, he created a place that I can go. I can sit down. I can share the most asinine, stupid, retarded things, and my friends just laugh at me. But when I share these stupid things that I'm thinking, just flat out telling myself, I don't care. Today, I don't care what it is. When I tell myself, that thing that I've been holding on to, thinking about, as soon as I tell myself, it goes away. And I'm not thinking about it anymore. We laugh about it and, you know, it's on to something else. I never really fully utilized what I can get out of these meetings. And all of last year, I had started doing that. Telling on myself. I've been going to retreats. I've been doing my three meetings a week. Maybe I'll do more. I don't know. That's what's working right now. I'm just going to be honest. And getting back to my higher power, you know, I've been praying and praying and asking for help. And lo and behold, it's all been here. It's been here the whole time. And I cannot expect my higher power to do anything for me if I don't come to these meetings. He's that poem about the footprints in the sand, for him to pick me up and carry me, it is my responsibility to come to these meetings, to stay plugged into the program, to work the steps, to change who I am to who I need to be that person that my family depends on. And if you guys ever wonder why I have this disease, why me? I'm here to say thank you. You have this disease, so you guys are here for me, so I have a place to go, so I have a place to share, and thank you for listening to me.